ago. The thanks for the information on we got some information from you recently on North Star. It was a was it an RFP that you had sent out
for North Star?
Yes, it was. I sent out an RFP, and I think it's going to be part of a packet that's going to be sent out to the conference in August.
Okay. That's what that had to do with. Okay. Well, yeah. What we're doing is putting that material together and putting on CD so people could share with it. And that RFP is for your training provider.
Yep. That is correct. So it's a live RFP, and actually, it ends next week.
Oh, great. How are you having any indications of people interested in bidding on it?
Yes. I got six companies that actually emailed us saying they're going to put a bid in, and actually I had another five show up to our bidders conference.
Awesome.
So it was pretty good.
Who just joined?
Rebecca Orozco of Cochise College in Arizona.
Hey, Rebecca. Daniel, I'd like it if you can explain to us about the process of this RFP, because it's a great idea and everyone needs to do it. You can either try to do this training in house, or what you can do. And you want to lead up to what you did in terms of you were awarded the Brownfields grant, correct?
Yes, we were.
And do you want to go from there on how you got to where you are now?
Yep, we awarded the Brownfield grant for the first time back in 2008. And from then on, we had cycles of 25 per student. So leading up till today,
joined? Sorry
Adrian
for the interrupt.
Adrian Well.
Who?
Oh, Adrian Well.
Hey, Adrian. Okay.
Hi, Mike. Hi.
Whenever someone joins, I interrupt, and then we're just going to go on with our discussion. Daniel's talking about an RFP that they recently released and how they led up to where they're at now. Okay. So you're looking. So you've already done a cycle.
Yes.
And then go on from there.
Yep, we already done a cycle, and now is the opportunity for us to enhance what we're doing in our job training in terms of looking for more trainers or different type of trainers that can enhance what we're doing. Just from getting, if you go through your cycles, your PCS cycle is some feedback from your students as well as the contractors on how the cycle went, and of course because placement at the end result of your cycle. So what ended up happening was we saw that some of our students needed a little more hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
So we added that feature in our RFP, and now that we put that request out, our existing trainers, which is our EMC, they're going to put together their proposal, but it left an open space for more competitive bids to come in. So that's where we are right now, where some local people have gotten together that does training in the state of Connecticut. They got together, so they're going to submit their RFP as well. And at the end of the day, we're going to select the best program as curriculum also for our program. Again, suitable for what's happening here in Connecticut, and we'll move forward from there. So it's pretty exciting to see them come in and people start to outline their curriculum. Because as we all know, our industry is very diverse, and it'll give us a nice opportunity to see what new ideas and fresh ideas will come of this RFP we put out.
So are they going to determine the curriculum themselves, or are you dictating what certificates they're going to have to provide you?
Is it twofold? One, we some curriculum that we definitely deem necessary, and also we want to add some new instruction in there, and as well as they're going to bring to the table what they feel the industry is needing right now, or any changes the industry is having now. So it works both ways, and then that's what we'll kind of negotiate on what we think will fit into this program. And our program, I know most programs run about 4 weeks, 6 weeks. Our program runs for 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So within that, we can kind of have a little flexibility to add an element or delete an element. And actually, we've been pretty lucky. We had some trainers actually add on services to the cycle on like a Saturday. They may do like wastewater treatment on a Saturday, which is all voluntary, and they can come out for a span of four or five weeks on Saturday, dedicate their time to take our trainees out to find out more information and train them on wastewater. So we've been pretty lucky in those terms to have great trainers.
Great. it's a great idea, and it's an interesting idea. There's a lot of different approaches to this, and you can try to do everything from the top down, and it sounds like you're kind of doing a combination. You've done some top-down planning in terms of the certifications you're going to offer, and then you're looking at your contractors to come up with some ideas. And you've already gotten about 8 proposals?
That's right.
Great. The annual conference, when we meet in Alexandria, we're going to have the attorney from EPA talk about that, and it's nice. There's some interesting things you may want to find. It'll probably be very timely for you because there's subgrantees and there's contractors,
mm-hmm.
and the subgrantees are subject to all of the regulations of the grantee. Subcontractors form a different set of regulations, but you've got to do exactly what you're doing. You've got to go out on the RFP. And one of the big problems, when we first started talking to our early grantees about this, there were a lot of gulps in the audience because often they would have local consultants and they would just bring them on board and they weren't going through a... Two problems would occur. One, they weren't going through a vetting process or a competitive bid process where
That's
they
right.
got at least 3 bids. Or they were treating them as subgrantees and they weren't really subject to all the regs, which they were subject to all the regs of the grantee, and so they were having some issues that way. So it sounds like you've learned from some experience.
Mm-hmm.
Who joined during when Daniel was talking?
Adrian Well from the Green Team Bridgeport.
Oh, great. Hey, Adrian.
And Paula.
Hi.
From Boston.
Hey, Paula.
Hi.
And Taylor from Youth Build Louisville.
Okay.
Who from Youth Build Louisville?
Jared Taylor.
Hi.
Jared.
Hi.
Taylor. Thanks for your email during the week, Jared.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you for having me.
We've got some youth builds. We've had some very successful youth build programs. Is your program just getting started, Jared?
We've been in operation for about six or 8 years. We're just starting to move into green technologies, trying to go that way. We work in a economically depressed area with lots of brownfield sites, and so we see this as a wonderful opportunity to not only enhance the community, but train young men and women in how to do that while we're enhancing the community.
If it's okay with Daniel, maybe in the post-session notes this week, I'll send out his RFP for. Is that okay, Daniel? To share that.
Yep, that's fine.
Share it with the group. Often people will ask, well, how do you go about getting your trainers? And you either generate them in-house or you've got a group of trainers you've been working with, often it's community college or university. And you're kind of using a model of a new grantee who is just, while you've been doing it, this would be something that a new grantee might use if he was getting started and needed to get into this whole area.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're thinking. And we're kind of looking at this as a great opportunity to produce trainers, produce people who know what they're doing. So
yeah.
We have a community college down we're hoping to partner with. They're developing a similar program. We're hoping to kind of compare notes.
Great. A couple of issues we had from last week, we were talking about certifications. We're going to talk a little bit more about certifications. It was that whole area of weatherization certifications, and particularly the BPI certifications. The obvious ones in remediation are pretty clear, but when we start getting into weatherization, it starts to get a little squeezy here because it's new technology. And the people who, of course, you know, we all know the thing about certifications is certifications are in the eyes of the beholder. In other words, anyone could certify anybody. Anyone could accept anybody's certification. The exception to that is the feds have mandated certain certifications that you have to have. And what they've done is they've published in federal registers, for example, in HAZWOPR, 1910-120 is the Bible, and basically they've said, if you're going to get a HAZWOPR certification, you're going to have these set of skills and knowledges, and you're going to have to train to these. And they've done the same thing in lead, which we're going to talk about today, and asbestos. But in weatherization, which we were talking about last week, we haven't done that yet. They haven't gone that far, and we're not sure if someone is. And, you know, BPI stood out in front of Building Performance Institute, and they were involved in HVAC for a long time, and it was a natural thing for them to step into. So they had already had air conditioning, heat pump. They were training people. Actually, here in Raleigh, North Carolina, in RTP, Underwriters Laboratory just announced they're going to be doing training, and they're going to do training in solar, for example, because they've done a lot in the electrical area. And what they're going to do is be training electrical technicians, and they're going to be training them on safe handling of electrical solar panels. They find that often there's many accidents and electrical failures, not so much the panels, but the installing of the panels and the electrical connections to the panels, to either the grid or to the boxes that come off the panel. So they're going into a fairly extensive, and they're going to issue their certification. Well, the whole idea of this is, what is that certification worth? And it's only worth kind of what stands behind it, what your curriculum is, and what kind of reputation you have. So in some areas, particularly health and safety areas, the certs are very well defined, and the requirements and what stands behind them is very well defined. But weatherization is one of those things that we're still in. It's a work in progress. We've got the building analyst. We're talking about this building envelope, a residential building envelope, accessible areas, air leakage control installer. You know, this is what their cert. They have a residential building envelope, whole house air leakage control crew chief, and they've got some other certifications. But the problem we're having, and I think it was pointed out last week, is there's not yet a BPI certification, and they said there's one under the works for the hands-on installer, that the type of person that our target group is aimed at. Does anyone have anything to shed on that in terms of additional? There was some, I think it was in Kansas, that they had come up with their own type of certification standards. Paula, I think where you're at, they've got standards up there for the weatherization installer?
Well, not under BPI. It's under WAP.
Okay.
Right. So they're all under WRAP, because a lot of us work with community action programs. This is Adrian speaking.
Okay.
So a lot of the work that we've done in developing our curricula really does have to do with WAP guidelines.
Okay.
And or some of the NCON guidelines. We worked with Siemens Building Technologies, for instance.
Are you issuing a certificate then? Is it your own certificate, or are you calling?
Yes.
How do you call it, an installer certificate of some
sort? Weatherization installer, right.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it has a heavy carpentry component.
Okay.
Yeah, ours is our own also. We just call it energy efficiency technician, and it's basically weatherization, insulation, and we contract with a company to do the dense pack insulation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, BPI does some dense pack, and they do components of it, but theirs is much more analytical and more towards the engineer or professional.
Mm-hmm.
Where we need.
Adrian,
something.
Do you do the blower door test?
Yes, we do. We have kind of a system where we do contracting on one hand for weatherization.
Oh, okay.
So we have a fairly large contract with our local CAP agency. So we teach people all the measures that we have to do ourselves in contracting. So that's one of them, the blower door and the caulking and what air sealing is something that we have to
air
do.
Air sealing, okay. And
yeah.
you do the dense pack?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Both the exterior walls and the knee walls and
knee walls.
Open attics. Yeah.
Thanks.
Sure.
Anyone that's developing a weatherization curriculum, you may want to touch base with either one of you in terms of. But you evolved yours out of the WAP guidelines. Is that
we
it?
We both did, I guess.
Yeah, and just
mm-hmm.
took their guidelines.
Right.
And
well, that's the only call for it right now, to be honest, because even the utilities are doing the WAP program. So,
right.
the middle class market hasn't developed yet. So, we're hoping that with the vice president's announcement in October, that'll kind of help kick it off.
Coming.
Yeah, but it's a long time coming, right?
Well, as was this.
Mm-hmm.
Jared, if you want to. I don't know if you know that we're based in Boston, but our weatherization program is actually in Lowell.
It's in where?
It's in Lowell. Yeah.
Okay. I'm relatively new, so I'm looking things up right now. I'm kind of Googling WAP and trying to get some of these.
Do you have a Google contact? Is the website, is it WAP.org or? Is there a address?
Weatherize.org.
Pardon? What is that?
Weatherize.org.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a specific state or what it is, if it's a national program. Looks like it might be a national program. But I'm just kind of trying to get as much information here as I can. Like I said, we're kind of new into this. Our training program is gearing towards a weatherization component. We have no certification as such. We're not developing any. We're trying to go based off the BPI information. But like you say, I think that's kind of geared more towards professionals, and it kind of leaves some people, you know, kind of going, huh, scratching their heads.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm trying to look for a more simple certification that would allow a greater number of people to kind of get that experience and get that exposure.
Well, if you're interested, like I said, we just finished one cycle in Lowell, and we're gearing up for another one to start in the fall. Our placements have been great. It's an eight-week program, and we're working with all of the WAP subcontractors in the area.
Okay.
They know the program. So if you wanted to, if you wanted to consider, a further conversation, I'd be happy to talk with you.
Yeah, I would love that.
Jared, are you going to Alexandria next week or in August?
I've shot it past my boss. I think we were gonna send somebody from our office. Yes, but I'm not sure if it was gonna be me or not. I need to involve. If it's not me, I need to figure out who's going to go, and they need to be in these phone calls as well. We are planning on it, yes.
Yeah. This will be discussed there, and it would be nice to have some guidance on a certification curriculum, and it may just evolve out of the WAP guidelines, and everyone will develop their own and come up with some sort of a certification that would be applicable to our target groups. It would be useful, particularly for new grantees who are just getting into this. The two landmines are that one is the BPI not being applicable as a package, and the other one is kickback from whether or not the weatherization, there's so much weatherization training going on that if there's going to be an overabundance of people hitting the road and not enough work out there.
Well, that's kind of why we talked about this last week, remember, how well it fits in with the brownfield stuff, because you're really training people for a broader spectrum of intervention, and therefore when they show up for an employer, they've got more than one thing to talk about.
That's right.
So our people, this is Adrian talking again, our people go through lead and asbestos, has WAPR as well as weatherization. Maybe not, depends on who we're working for. If we're working for the local CAP agency, lead for sure, but they're not so interested in has WAPR. But if we're working for the Department of Labor, which is, of course, our biggest our biggest client, we would try to put in, for sure, the lead plus the RRP and the OSHA 10 for at least.
Let's. That's a great segue. We HAZWOP is required for the brownfields grantees.
Mm-hmm.
Weatherization, and people are kind of getting into that because there's just been an awful lot of stimulus money and talk about that, and that's evolving. The big thing that I think our grantees will have that you just mentioned that other programs may not have is the RRP lead certifications and the AHERA. The asbestos, but let's move into the RRP. They've delayed the requirement for contractors till this fall, October, but the rule is in effect, and the enforcement has been delayed a little bit, but the rule is in effect, and it's going to go, we're going to have to gear up for it. It's an interesting reg in that it follows up and tightens the old lead regs. Lead regs have been in effect for about nine years, and we've had this series of lead, and in fact, I think they're allowing people who have the old lead certificates to get a 4-hour instead of an 8-hour to upgrade to the RRP. But this whole issue of RRP, we've got the contractor, we've got the trainer, and then we've got the individual. And, of course, there's a set of standards for the trainer to get a certified acceptable curriculum in place, which was similar to the old regs. And then you've got the contractor who's going to be doing the work, and then we've got the individual. And it's, what is it, one person on a job site has to have the certification. Would anyone like to pick up on that?
The crew leader has to have, this is Paula, the crew leader has to have the certification. However... that's the regulation part. However, from the contractors, if the entire crew, this is the contractor, not the sub or the crew leader, it's an advantage if the installers as well as the crew leader have the RRP from a bidding on the job standpoint. It makes for a more competitive bid and a more attractive employee sometimes. The pushback that's at least as we see it, is the pushback from contractors is paying for the certification and what's it doing to their bottom line. So.
Right, and we're talking about 8 hours of training. Wait, 8 and 4? A lot of them are 8 and 4 hours of...
Yeah.
And this makes your programs more valuable to the extent that your graduates come out with this training. Now, the trick here is to find a certified RRP trainer, a certified trainer. Now, some of you all are trainers, certified trainers, right?
Yes.
JFY is, isn't it?
No, we aren't, but our longtime training partner, IIE, was one of the early adopters, and one of our graduates is one of the certified RRP trainers at IIE, and he trains in English and in Spanish.
Mm-hmm. We have one of those, too.
Awesome.
It's really handy. But in Connecticut, there aren't very many trainers already passing the test. So we only have 2 people who are qualified to do that.
In all of Connecticut?
No, in the amongst the people that we generally use as trainers.
Oh, okay.
Well, they have to have that certified curriculum, and it's relatively new. And these are usually the people that are doing it are the old lead people who are already
had lead
certification.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what these do. Mm-hmm. There are asbestos lead mold.
Yeah. Now, the people who are just getting into this, this could be a mysterious and dark area for you. And I think that what you need to look at is start from the bottom up, find someone who's very familiar with lead certifications, and then you've got to make sure that they've got the RRP. If they don't know about RRP, then you need to move on. And if someone's going to be a trainer and they're just going to buy a curriculum and teach it, forget it. They can't. They can't. They can't.
No. They have to have the certification from the state.
That's right.
From the EPA, rather. And EPA does that in a centralized fashion through the regions.
Right. Well,
so it's region one for us.
Right, and this goes a lot like the OSHA regs and the HERA regs and the old lead regs. States can be authorized. They could pick up the authorization. I think North Carolina, actually Massachusetts, Oregon, Utah, Rhode Island, Kansas, Mississippi, North Carolina, Iowa, and Wisconsin, I think, have chosen to have their own program, which has to be at least as stringent as the federal program. And in those states, if you're in one of those states, then what you need to do is go to the either. It's interesting. Often it's in the health department. You'd think it'd be in the DNR, but the DNR, but it's often in the HHS health and safety branches. Because the whole reason for RRP, which is a follow-up on lead, is child health. I think the law was actually written for children under six and people who were in public, any kind of housing, pre-78 housing and anything that's child-occupied and defining child as under six. So it is a health and safety issue. But it really has broad implications even on weatherization, because if you're going to change out windows, you've got to have RRP.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
If you're going to, for those people who are thinking of getting into weatherization and you're in a town that has old houses, now here in Raleigh or some of the more later developed towns, we tend to have less lead paint issues in pre-78 housing. So it may not be quite as big an issue, but as you go into the northeast, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, our weatherization people here in the Bridgeport-Fairfield County area absolutely require it. And if you have contractors who are concerned about paying for the course, you can get a lot of that training for free because it comes right through the ERA funding.
Mm.
Our first classes were given to the contractors who were actually contracting with our local CAP agency.
So your advice basically is if you're starting out in either weatherization or even in brownfields remediation that's going to involve lead, you go to your state, either health or environmental department, probably health department, and find out if, first you want to, it's easy enough to find out if they're authorized. If they're not, then you've got to start looking at local approved trainers in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And
the EPA website
EPA has a list, yeah.
Has a list, and they it seems like they're updating it, and it's by state. It's by region and by state.
Okay. Go to them, and then the whole idea of Daniels, of going out on RFP then to start getting soliciting ideas from these trainers may not be a bad one.
Oh, yeah. I'm chiming real quick. This is Daniel from North Star. So funny, I'm going to kind of use my words loosely here because I'm not sure if I'm supposed to put this out, but one of our contractors who responded to RRP, he informed us more about what the RRP, the future of it and how it's affecting all the contractors here in Connecticut. So, So with that information, I took that and said, well, you know, this might be one of our finalists here who actually brought us something new to the table that no one else had mentioned.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely. So we've really hit a HAZWOPR weatherization and weatherization that ties to lead. HERA, the asbestos regs have kind of been a stepchild, kind of taken back seats recently. They're back in the days of the old lead. They followed up after lead, and they followed the same format of EPA coming out with standards and curriculum, and then going through local states who adopted the programs. Are any of you doing asbestos certs with certification?
Yeah, we do at JFY.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be plenty of asbestos around
to
either be removed, or we had a big water mains or steam valve burst a couple of days ago. It was big news here. I don't know if it went anyplace else, but it was in a particular section of Boston, and because the pipes, the pipe wrappings. There were particulates that were spewing into the air. So there was a multi-organization team of responders, first, second, and third responders, and cleanup people involved in both the air, the air particulates, and also all the cleaning up the surface areas, and then the water.
And you know, here it was originally in schools where you had that big push on asbestos in schools.
Oh, asbestos tiles. Yep.
Right. And that was a really huge thing. It was those of us that used to work in EPA, we used to call it the pollutant of the year, and it was the pollutant of the year there. We always come up with something, PM10, lead, radon, you know, it was one of those. And it was, you know, it was time for a new crisis, and that was it. And of course, they had this huge push to remove all the asbestos from schools, and then they came to realize that encapsulating it was actually a better idea later on. Once they did all that work, it was kind of like the underground storage tanks. It started to reach more steady state, but these other things popped up, like refineries. If you've got a welder and he's got asbestos pipe, and you've got painters, and you've got, you know, carpenters who are running into it in commercial instances. So it's kind of moved away from the schools because they've taken care of that issue and now into the more commercial applications. And the neat thing is, if you can give a student a HERA or asbestos certification, he's golden, because you can't do anything on that site if it's got asbestos unless you've got the cert. So it does, but you have to find out if you've got a lot of asbestos in your area. If you're an industrialized community, it's probably a certification worth looking at. Now, Paula, have you found that an expensive training to provide?
Well, it's more expensive because it's 32 hours, and you know, these things go by the hours. But it's definitely marketable, and the employers that we work with say that's, you know, they actually have more asbestos work than they have lead work, and that is because of some of the things that you mentioned, and also demolition sites where, you know, you're demolishing older buildings, and lo and behold, it's full of asbestos. So that's what you need for that type of a crew. So Larry can speak to this better than I can, but there seems to be a lot of asbestos work, and it was, you know, the employers on our advisory committee who continue to suggest that's a worthwhile and marketable certification.
Certainly, if you're in a community that was built up in the 20s or before, all the buildings, if you're going to deconstruct them, you're going to have asbestos issues and lead issues.
Right, and if you're renovating them too, I mean, you know, as you said, it comes up in the renovation.
Right, right. And it is a nastier thing because of the fine particulates that come off, the fine strands. It's a difficult thing to work with.
Right, and it comes up, and it has come up in a few. Well, we haven't been in the weatherization business that long, but you know, sometimes pipes. That's what pipes are still wrapped with.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. All the old steam pipes are wrapped.
The old steam pipes. Yes, that's what happened a couple of days ago.
And
is anyone planning to do mold?
Yes.
A good one this time of the year. Now, here's an interesting cert, because mold falls into the weatherization type of category, where we've got ASTM standards.
Yep.
Training to any particular standard on mold?
I think this cycle, I was looking at planning to do mold supervisor remediation certificate, and I know that's like, I think it's like 24 hours or something like that.
Now, that's one that's good in the southeast. I mean, if down in here, North Carolina and south and Florida and in these hot, humid climates, it's a great certification. Now, that was one that really picked up a few years ago. Our grantees were talking about mold is gold, and it was great. It was being driven. It was being driven by the insurance companies, believe it or not. That was the catalyst for the mold removal. And it was there exactly what you're talking about, supervisor, and they never came up with a federal guide, you know, federal cert like they had in some of the others, though. And so that's kind of come by the wayside. Radon was another one. Radon was flash kind of became a big issue. And do any of you give a radon certificate at all? That's particular to areas with basements.
Yeah, we don't do radon, but we have this. I think I sent you all my certifications. We have this all hazards, and radon is part of it, but it's not a. This was just something that one of our trainers does, but we don't. It's not a standalone certification.
And again, as we always say, and we've got to wrap this session up because we try to limit it to 30 minutes, but you really goes back to your needs assessment and your advisory committees. And as Daniel's case, people who are you're soliciting work from is what is the work in the area? And right now, what's hot and what are people looking at, where are the jobs? And that may change next year.
Mm-hmm.
But for now... that, you know, it looks like RRP is the hot cert with some sort of a weatherization. We have to have the HAZWOPER the asbestos, working with asbestos after that.
This is Pete Kelly with the City of Gallup. I had a quick question,
mm-hmm.
if you all don't mind. Is it possible to get certified for conducting hazmat surveys?
Well,
or is that something that should be left to the engineering types?
Well, we have phase one, phase two. That the whole site assessment process is, and that has to be signed off by an engineer. But we've had grantees do, in fact, I think in Seattle they wrote a curriculum for, and they taught phase one. Assessment. Phase one can be done by just about anyone. Phase one assessment, site assessment, is basically looking at real estate, looking at the property, looking at real estate prior uses of the property to see if there was a battery plant on it. Obviously, you may have a problem if there was if there was a paint company in 1910. You've got a high likelihood of lead everywhere. So that's what the phase one does. When you move, once you decide there could be a contaminant, you move to phase two.
Right.
Now you're doing your boring holes. And actually, we've had, before we got into some of these other areas, we had a lot of programs doing test well drilling, for example, mm-hmm. and doing sampling. And that is a whole area for brownfields in sampling, not so much even remediation, but sampling, doing test cores and sending them to the lab. And setting up that whole phase two system. Now, that has to be signed off by an engineer, but the technicians that work for them who are doing the drilling, there's not a certification for them, but it would help if your program trained for that.
How about, like, asbestos surveys or lead paint surveys, indoor air quality investigations, these types of things? Not necessarily the ASTM 1527s, but something designed to identify asbestos and then help develop a remediation plan for removal.
Yeah, they have those, don't they? Those are that's included in the inspector programs.
So could we offer a certification for that? Could we develop a curriculum around that, or is
you could do it, but it's already there and it's mandated. But the only problem is that whether your target group would be applicable to that. You're talking more on the. It depends on who you're training. You're more toward the college graduate type of person you're training, rather than perhaps a technician type.
Okay.
You could do it, and community colleges would do it, universities do it, and there's a certification and a curriculum in place to do it. I think Kansas State trains has a whole set. There's a whole set of, we call them HSRCs, that set up. I think another one is Rocky Mountain. They have an institute where they train these higher level courses. I guess the question is more of, would it fit the target group of the people that we're working with? And the answer would probably be not. Unless you're working with, say, disabled vets. Depends how you design your program. Great. Well, we'll kind of go over some of these things in the post-session notes, and if anyone has any questions, we could bring them up. We'll send those out in a day or two. Anyone that has anything to add, just send everything to the we'll send it to the group. I appreciate your participation, and talk to you all soon.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, okay. Thank you. Have a great week.
Okay. We'll
bye-bye.
See you in 2 weeks.
You're welcome, Daniel.
Okay.
Glad you could join.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. Mm-hmm. Talk to you later.